Good morning and welcome to the Education Finance Committee. This remote hearing is being held in accordance with House Rule 10.01. This rule has been posted online and is linked to our public meeting notice on the House website. All remote hearings will be recorded and live streamed by House Public Information Services. Members, you should have the content of this meeting in a virtual packet, and it will be available to you and for the public. These materials have been posted online. Members, if you're looking for these materials, they're placed in the attached calendar invitation sent out by Ms. Burt. And to get on the list to be recognized by the chair, members using the Zoom interface have the ability to raise their hand via the app. Ms. Burt will place your name on a list to be recognized. Ms. Sunderland, will you please take the roll?
Chair Dabney is excused. Vice Chair Sandsted?
Present.
Representative Kreisha?
Present.
Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Daniels? Representative Daniels, let me see you there.
Present.
Perfect. Representative Damon.
Present.
Representative Drazkowski.
Here.
Representative Erickson.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Jordan.
Present.
Representative Marquardt.
Present.
Representative Mueller.
Present.
Representative Richardson.
Present.
Representative Thompson.
Thompson present.
Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott present.
Representative Zhang is excused. Representative Joachim.
Present.
That is the roll, and we do have a quorum.
Thank you very much for that. Representative Erickson, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes from Wednesday, February 17th? And if so, would you like to make a motion to approve the minutes from Wednesday, February 17th?
Representative Erickson moves approval of the minutes from February 17th.
Very good. Is there any objections to moving the minutes from Wednesday, February 17th? All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Same sign. Hearing none, those minutes will be approved. Today we will be discussing and laying over two bills. First up is House File 587, and then we'll get to House File 725. Representative Wolgamott, would you like to make a motion to move House File 587 before the committee to lay it over for possible inclusion for further consideration at a later date?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Representative Wolgamont moves that House File 587 be moved before the committee and laid over for possible inclusion at a later date. Members of the committee and members of the public, again, we won't be taking action on this bill. We will be listening to the testimony and then laying it over. Representative Murphy, you are now before the committee. Welcome, and please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much. I'm Mary Murphy, District 3B, and I think this is the fourth time I've been before the Education Finance Committee with a proposal to bring community schools to more full service community schools to more communities that are have been patiently waiting on the list to get picked to become a full service community school. I learned about the full service community schools back when I was still teaching, and that was in the early 90s. And what a difference the full service community schools made to our school district, 709 in Duluth. And it made the difference in the people the people that were involved, the families that embraced the opportunity to be part of the full service community schools, but especially the children that started out in the program who now are in senior high school. But it started with the early grades in Central Hillside districts of Duluth. And when at one time there, I was able to bring, or the for Duluth days, I think it was, the guys with ties came. And they were all dressed up, but they were a little group of kids that had never had very many opportunities to get to, from one side of Duluth to the other, let alone to the big city and the capital. And the guys were dressed in fancy ties and colored shirts of varieties of dress shirts. And those kids were so proud to be there, but they were proud to be in school every single day that they were in Lincoln Elementary and Lincoln Middle School, providing them with opportunities for all their learning, to meet the learning standards, but also to meet cultural and other standards of growing up in a community that cared. And that's what's impressed me so much about the school districts. And every school has to have their own plan for how they're going to run their full service community school district. And they have to have a totally immersed coordinator. And the funding from the full service community school plan that you're considering is basically what funds the first coordinator. And then they follow the plan and the communities are revolutionized in the changes that they take place because they become involved in the whole education of the students that they're concerned with. We have three testifiers here today from the full service community schools in Duluth, and I'm going to let them say what they have to say because we don't want to use all the time up.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. And to the testifiers, once you begin, please have your eye on the chat. We will have timing going on because we have quite a few testifiers. It looks like our first testifier today is Rachel Pfaff, a full-service community school coordinator from Lincoln Park Middle School out of the Duluth Public School System. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members. My name is Rachel Tapa, and I am the full-service community school coordinator at Lincoln Park Middle School in Duluth. My role exists to help create, maintain, and strengthen the bridge between our school, families, and community. We strive to build a community that is honoring and responsive to all of our students through collaborative leadership practices, authentic family and community engagement, integrated student supports, and expanded and enriched learning opportunities. So what does this look like in practice? We hear this question a lot because it's not a one-size-fits-all approach. Here are a few examples. We have a community school leadership team comprised of families, school staff, and community partners who come together to share perspectives and provide direction for our work. Then we create intentional partnerships to address shared school and community priorities and goals. This year looks a lot different compared to typical school years and has been difficult in many ways. Our full service community school model has equipped us to adapt and respond to the many changes and challenges. Key concerns and themes this year have been connectedness and well-being. Students and adults alike have struggled with feeling disconnected and isolated. If there's anything this pandemic has taught us, it's that connection matters deeply. We've developed some creative ways to stay connected, for example, by sharing caring messages from community members with our students. I believe the committee received an article related to our caring messages. Our school has been on a journey of becoming a trauma-informed and restorative school over the past couple of years. This has laid the groundwork for our teachers and staff to support our students and each other. A staff buddy system and optional virtual weekly staff support circles have provided space for reflection and mutual support. Men as Peacemakers, who you'll hear from today, and St. Louis County Public Health have joined with our staff and students to provide social emotional learning opportunities and facilitate and participate in circles. Teachers and families build trust and share hopes and dreams for students through relationship-focused parent-teacher home visits. We're also developing an on-site food and supply pantry to help ensure students are healthy and ready to learn. And Farm to School, co-located day treatment program, Northwood Children's Services, and science teachers work together to grow and care for our school garden. The produce is harvested and utilized in family and consumer science and health classes and shared with families. In a typical school year, we host community partners in our building during and after school to work alongside our educators to offer a variety of after-school clubs and activities. Partners from local colleges provide academic tutoring and mentoring in the classroom and with our after-school homework club. This has moved online during distance learning. During the pandemic, youth-serving and supportive housing partners like the Boys and Girls Club and American Indian Community Housing Organization are providing safe in-person programming and distance learning support at their locations. Our counselors, social workers, and educators spend time on site in some of these spaces, and we have data sharing releases in place which help us coordinate and communicate with families. I'd like to close with a story from one of our special education teachers who usually leads an after-school game club. During the pandemic, this has shifted to an online game club that meets Saturday mornings. He was unable to testify today, and I asked him if there was anything he wanted me to highlight. He said the biggest thing was the sense of community this has created among students who have faced a loss of connectedness. They miss their peers and teachers, and some have really struggled academically or with their mental and emotional well-being. Yet they thrive in this space, face-to-face with each other and an educator for a positive shared experience. Together, they're building relationships, resilience, and a bridge to school. I hope that my testimony today helps the committee understand the need for more funding for full-service community schools. The significant and persistent disparities within our education system have only been exacerbated and brought to light by this pandemic, and it's more important than ever for us to address both academic and non-academic barriers to education and to create safe, inclusive spaces for our students, families, and community to collectively create the conditions of well-being necessary for all students to learn and thrive. Please support House File 587. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Tapa, for that testimony, and my apologies for the mispronunciation of your name. Up next, we have Serrano Robinson, the Boys Group Coordinator, Men as Peacemakers. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, thank you for having me. My name is Serrano Robinson. I use he, him, his pronouns. I'm the youth restorative program coordinator at Men as Peacemakers. I'm just inviting youth of all identities now into our programs. But just me, I'm just somebody who is big into youth development of all aspects. And it was really hard to actually follow Rachel's point because I think she hit all of them beautifully. I'm not as detailed and I kind of got a short little spiel of a message. But just having that immediate support for youth right away at the school is something that's really important. People that they can look up to that are not necessarily parents or immediately connected really actually helps like build that connection. And it's also like a bridge, you know, building that connection between the kids, the schools, and the communities. I know kids go to school and then, you know, their parents don't see them. So the community, the teachers, the people after school, they're actually that connection, that bridge to help the parents say like, hey, this is a good kid. This is what he needs. This is what she needs. Overall, I see it as a bridge. To be honest, if you're asking me, I would say, why not do it? I don't think there's any like downfalls to doing that at all, probably financially, but that's probably the only thing that's a downfall to it. It's clear that there's more to success than just academics. When I was a kid, I grew up in like, you know, the Bronx, New York. So it was really hard for me to focus because of other things that was going on. So if there's community schools that actually have programs, which are also free, that helps low income youth as well. Like a lot of the programs that we actually provide are free completely. And that helps on multiple aspects. It helps financially knowing that they don't actually have to pay, and it helps emotionally knowing that they don't actually have to have that burden to think about when it's going to actually end or is it going to be cut off. So I'm all this is going to sound messy. I'm sorry, but I'm all favor of community schools. Just knowing that we can have kids back from all aspects and not miss a beat is something that I'm really all for. success outside of academic is something that's really going to help them be successful as a human being and as an adult. I know academic is a big, big part, but it's not all the parts. And just ensuring that they have that connection, back to what Rachel said, is being those people to that they can look up to, that they can have as models, that they don't necessarily see as like parents or mom or uncle or those things. So I'm all in favor for it. And I just think we got to be more in favor for the youth. I even wish that there was more youth or actual like parents of youth on this call. I know I see a lot of representatives and I appreciate that, but it would be really cool to actually have some families and some youth that actually get affected, because I get affected, but I'm a worker. So I get affected because I love doing what I want to. I love doing what I do to help the kids be successful and develop. But it would be cool to actually see some more youth and some families on this call as well. But thank you for my time and thank you for allowing me to be here and to speak on this.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Robinson. You'll be happy to know that the next testifier is also a parent, so it'll be good to hear from her. We have up next Renee Vanette, a parent and also the president of the Duluth City Council. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Bonjour, bonjour, everybody. Annie, good morning. Mashkiki makwaikwe, nindijnikaz, ngezidotem, obashing, minua, Obashin and Dunjiba. Miigwech for having me on the committee. My name is Renee Vanette. I'm a parent. I was a parent advisor. I'm the current president of Duluth City Council. I have two children in Duluth Public Schools. They attend Denfeld as freshmen. I have had the support and ability to serve at the community schools at Myers-Wilkins and then over to Lincoln Park as a parent advisor. As an involved parent, I was at the table to make sure my children were getting their needs met, treated fairly. I was also able to help form policy and advise on changes for Native families, Native American families and other families, and others who do not know how to get to the table to have a seat. I'm a strong advocate for bringing community service schools into the schools and bring community into the schools. A lot of times children don't have food. Their parents and or parent could be struggling from anything from addictions, poverty, homelessness, hunger, transportation, lack of Wi-Fi and technology, and the list goes on and on. I am here for that. My children have a voice at the table through me. I am their mom. I am their strong arm, their teacher of life. With this voice, I am able to move around in the system and advocate for them and anyone else who needs it. My ladies are successful Native American children because I am a successful Native American woman, mom. Full service community schools has set the infrastructure beneath my feet so that I may maneuver in and out of the systems with success. As I said, I am now the president of the Duluth City Council and have served on many boards and commissions in that service area that we live in and that I represent. My relationship with the community schools work is one that I have worked between to move policy and law. As council president, I put in motion our intergovernmental committees from the school board, the county commissioners, and the county commissions. The way I work with the intergovernmental committees is to build relationships across our city because we all have the same or similarly the same constituency base. And we need to be communicating about how we get policy and law passed across our city. As a councilor who represents the 4th district, which is low-income Native African heritage and poorer community members, I put my focus on community members without a voice. Our intergovernment body committees are also thinking and working in the same mindset. When Native and other minority poor children are successful, all children are successful. Once they are successful, we are all successful. That same concept, we all do better when we all do better, by Paul Wellstone, still rings true today and every day. Thank you very, very much for listening to my children's truth and how community schools have positively made an impact on our lives and the lives of the community. Please, 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 please highly consider funding $90 million for full-service community schools in both fiscal year 2022 and 2023. Chi miigwech. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Vanette, for that testimony. At this time, we would like to hear from anyone from the public who wishes to testify either for or against this bill. When this hearing was posted, the public was provided with instructions on how to sign up to testify during the public portion of this bill hearing. We will proceed to hearing from those who have signed up. And right now, it looks like we have Katie Kampfhoff, a special education teacher from Patrick Henry High School. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and then proceed.
Yeah, good morning, Chair Sandsted and members of the committee. My name is Katie Kampfhoff, and I have been a public high school special education teacher for the past 14 years, first in Milwaukee Public Schools, then Brooklyn Center, and now Minneapolis Public Schools. Nearly 6 years ago, I found my family and community at Patrick Henry High School in North Minneapolis. That's why I'm here today to testify in support of House Bill 587, fully funding full-service community schools. We can all agree without a shadow of a doubt that the pandemic has laid bare just how important our public schools are to our society. They are the lifeline of our communities. Public schools do so much for their communities, especially high poverty and rural public schools. Beyond academics, my school alone has provided both before and during the COVID-19 pandemic, food, clothing, a school-based clinic, mental health and group supports, laundry services, fitness, restorative practices, mindfulness and meditation, housing resources. The list is literally endless. I read an article the other day about a principal in South Carolina winning the highest civilian honor because he had taken on a third job working at Walmart overnight just to financially help his school community with basic human needs. That ain't right. One of my school social workers created a community closet on her own, providing hygiene products and high quality, gently used and new clothing. She is regularly asking for resources through her own personal network on social media or emails to staff. That ain't right. Every single one of us is very concerned about the mental health of our children during the pandemic. People are concerned about not only children's mental health, but also issues around safety and abuse. But what does it say about the condition of our society that a classroom teacher or school counselor is the only access point or identifier for mental health or protective services for young people? And what does that say about our society that healthcare is not a basic human right? That ain't right. We have an opportunity to be innovative this legislative session. We have an opportunity to say, yes, we believe public schools are the lifeline of our communities. That, yes, we want to support whole child wellness. And we can send that message easily by passing House Bill 587. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for that testimony. Members, are there any questions at this time for either the bill author or any of the testifiers? I see Representative Jordan.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And my question is for Katie, who is a constituent of mine. It's good to see you. Katie, can you talk a little bit about how full-service community schools, I know you are you have a lot of passion for children's mental health as well and your students' mental health. Can you talk a little bit about how full-service community schools impact both the academics and the mental health of the students that you teach?
Ms. Kampfhoff.
Yes. Well, at my school in particular over north, we have a school-based clinic that is an outside partner that comes into our building. They're actually housed in Henry. And so my students are able during the school day to go to the health clinic and see a mental health provider. They're also able to get their physicals done to participate in sports. In addition, the school-based clinic has helped to serve like a connection sometimes between the students and maybe the teachers or another adult in the building, and lets us see maybe a different side of a student that we might have previously struggled with a bit.
Representative Jordan, any follow-up?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm really glad that we are having this conversation here today.
Great. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My questions are for the author, Representative Murphy.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Murphy, can compensatory be used for a full-service community school?
Representative Murphy.
I'm not sure, but I saw Mr. Strom here.
Okay,
so could Mr. Strom help me out?
We will send that one over to Mr. Strom. Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson and Murphy. Yes, the compensatory revenue statute has a whole variety of purposes. Most of the functions that are being talked about in terms of community services would fit under one of the criteria, the more than 10 criteria that are listed in the compensatory uses statute. I'll have the committee administrator put a link to that statutory reference up for the committee members.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Follow-up, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Murphy, you know, the dollars that are received then through these grants for full-service community schools, do they pay for any of the services, or what is this this grant used for?
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair and Representative Erickson, my understanding is that in most cases at this time, but that could be discussed by your committee, but my understanding is that most of the grants are for the initial person that becomes the director of the program in a new program.
So, Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Representative Murphy, the entire grant then goes to set up the program through a coordinator?
Representative Murphy.
The funding from the full-service community schools, the primary amount is granted to the school district for that coordinator, yes.
And Madam Chair, one final question. Thank you. Representative Murphy, you know, if this were to go through fully as you have requested, how many more programs could come into being?
Representative Murphy.
I don't know that answer.
Thank you. I think we'll have to find out.
But we've never gotten our full request asked, but we have been able to go down the line of the waiting school districts considerably since we started.
Members, I'm wondering if Ms. Tappa might be able to weigh in as one of these coordinators. Perhaps she has an idea if there's any information on, you know, how this money is used or what an average cost to a coordinator would be, to give us an idea. Ms. Tappa, is that something that you are comfortable answering?
Sure. Sorry, go ahead.
I'm putting you on the spot, and I apologize for that, but maybe just giving members an idea of what the role of the coordinator is doing in reaching out to services within the community, and an idea of how those grant dollars were used, at least in your particular situation.
Sure. In my situation, the community school model, it started as a grassroots effort at the elementary site, Myers-Wilkins Elementary, which was grant school at the time, and it was all there was no
funding
for it.
Right.
It started, and then we were able to expand to the middle school with a grant from Minnesota Department of Education, I believe, in 2016, and those funds were just for 1 year, and then as well as to the high school, so that we now have a continuum. So it helped us get started. But since then, that funding was only for 1 year, and I believe those funds have come either from our school or our district since then.
Thank you for that. Representative Joachim.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you to the testifiers. We briefly touched on this issue when we heard the Governor's Due North plan, and I don't know if it was there that I'd heard the number 600, but I had heard that 600 more schools could be supported by this grant money to start full-service community schools. But what I really remember from that conversation, and Ms. Tappa kind of touched on this a little bit, maybe any of the other testifiers or the author could, is that that coordinator is key in helping build those private-public partnerships to bring the services into the school. A lot of these services that are provided by private entities so that we're not tapping into school funds. But just having that one connector in that school can open the door to so many more things that aren't available in the district. So I don't know if Representative Murphy wants to talk about that or any of the other testifiers. And then maybe I was trying to find a fiscal note on this. I hadn't seen one yet. But I know the number 600 sticks in my head from somewhere. Maybe somebody can enlighten me on that.
Representative Murphy?
Madam Chair, if I had had more prep time, I would have been able to answer these questions better. But the part that I saw was that now people are coming to the school, and the school isn't a 8-hour-a-day place. It's a 16-hour-a-day place in many cases. And but as I said, each school district has to have their own plan for how it's going to work in their communities. But the role that I've seen played is the director gets in touch with, especially it's so important with the county, because they do a lot of the county health service stuff, and they're able to work outside out with the school district then and these other private entities that come in and bring the kids out, or they work with the kids at the school district. And it's the organizations that take place and the new organizations that build up that really immerse the kids in a total program. And that's what makes the program so successful, as well as the, I know that there's one school district, but I can't remember, it's in southeastern Minnesota, I believe, that has a dental clinic right there at the school district for the children to go at certain times, and they don't have to miss a half a day of school for that. And so, it's a total plan, and I don't have those statistics. And I suspect that somebody that's listening here might have more statistics than I do.
Representative Youakim, follow up. And if not, I see Adosh Uni follow up.
Oh, just quick, I just wanted to also thank Representative Murphy for being such a champion on this issue. She's seen firsthand what this program can do. And I want to thank Councilmember and President Bennett for coming today and talking about how much this has impacted her community, but also her as a parent. And having that, having the connector there to bring in those private-public partnerships, and especially the partnerships from organizations that have worked in certain communities that may be hesitant to be engaged in their school, that feel welcomed and are able to participate in their children's education and grow as a family too. And just want to thank you all for being here.
Thank you. Next, we have Mr. Uni, who may be able to weigh in on some of this conversation. Mr. Uni, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. My name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations at the Department of Education. Thank you for the call or the question just around kind of what the numbers look like. So in the similar to this, just a different number, the governor's budget proposes, and I'm just working off the numbers I have. So $5 million a year for full service community schools, $100,000 for planning grants, up to $200,000 for implementation grants. The planning grants would cover some staffing costs, ability to do a community needs survey, which is really fundamental to the effectiveness of the of these programs. And then, of course, as we mentioned, the implementation grants would also go towards covering costs for a coordinator, as been discussed before. With the range of up to 100,000 and up to 200,000, we're looking anywhere from 25 to 50 schools would be covered in the governor's proposal. This proposal being $90 million would be much higher than that. So I think the reference of around 600 schools impact would be in that ballpark. Obviously, that's back of the envelope math. I haven't done the analysis there, but I think that that extent of coverage would be within the ballpark.
Thank you, Mr. Uni. Representative Krisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Murphy, thank you for the bill and your passion on this. I know the value of this, and there certainly are many examples where this is very, very beneficial. My question is to the testifier, Mr. Uni, if you had to rank in the governor's plan, as well as in this proposal of priorities, closing the achievement gap, broadband, or community schools, how would you rank those three?
Mr. Uni.
Representative Krisha, Madam Chair, Representative Krisha, thanks for the question. I'm not in a position to rank the priorities. I think that they're all extremely important to the governor across the administration. And I think you've seen from all of the proposals in education and in other areas that the governor believes a multi-pronged approach to providing the solutions for the state is the right way to go.
Madam Chair.
Representative Krisha.
Thank you, Representative Stansky, Madam Chair. And to the testifier, Mr. Uni, I appreciate the answer. So let's flip it around. If the governor had to recommend to me, what priorities would he recommend that I focus on? Broadband, achievement gap, or community schools?
Mr. Uni.
Madam Chair, Representative Krisha, so I can speak to what's in the governor's education budget as that's my role, and not to speak to any efforts around broadband specifically, although we've placed a lot of efforts on connectivity with federal funds over the last summer around devices and hotspots. So I know that that's been a big priority for the governor. But as you can see, the governor's come out with a range of proposals for a summer package that looks at getting kids back into school to look at learning loss. And then I would say almost all of the proposals really do target an equitable provision of educational services for students and pulling up those that have been historically underserved. So that's always the main priority. And community schools is one way to get to that, because we're looking at the school, at the communities with the most need. The students and families have been the most underserved based on that community needs assessment. And I think you see that in the bill that Representative Murphy is putting forward today. And so that's just one component to getting towards closing the academic achievement and opportunity gaps, as well as being able to provide more of a forum and opportunities for combating learning loss, which I would recommend, or I would point out that we do have the issue of learning loss and academic achievement even outside of the pandemic. This is something that we recognize. And so we see, you know, we're trying to go for that in our summer package, but we're also trying to go with that in our biennial budget, because those are ongoing issues. So just to too long didn't read. I would say that all of those that you pointed out are priorities, and they are community schools is just one component of attacking the achievement and opportunity gaps.
Representative Krisha.
Thank you, Mr. Uni. And I appreciate that. I'm really not trying to paint you in any corners. I really am trying to look at those and examine the data. I mean, if we can only move the needle with the limited funding we may have, which areas of importance should we be looking at? And the other thing, and I'm not looking for an answer on this, but I'll just call it out to the committee and I'll put in front of the testifiers. You know, we have in front of us huge needs in broadband, all the areas that you had. We have achievement gap areas, and certainly full service community schools is out there as a solution. One of the benefits that I see that we haven't talked about is if we were to pass recreational cannabis, we're going to need more full service community schools, because the problems at home will increase in the child protection as well as the parenting issues. And unfortunately, that's going to fall onto the schools. So I suspect if that initiative were to go through, this conversation will move ahead of broadband and achievement gaps. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Murphy, any closing comments?
I appreciate your consideration, and I will find out more information as we progress.
Thank you very much. And with that, Representative Wolgamott renews his motion to lay House File 587 over for possible inclusion for further consideration at a later date. Up next, Representative Youakim. You're welcome. Representative Youakim, would you like to make a motion to move House File 725 before the committee to lay over for possible inclusion for further consideration at a later date?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to move that we bring before the committee House File 725 to be laid over for a future date or a potential education bill.
Representative Youakim, before you introduce your bill, I understand you have an amendment you'd like to offer to get the bill in the shape you'd prefer. Could you please describe this author's amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair, I have the A2 amendment that makes some changes suggested by MDE and gets the bill in the shape that I would like to have it in.
Members, Representative Youakim has put the A2 before us. Is there any discussion? Okay, all in favor of adopting the A2, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Representative Youakim, your bill is in the shape you prefer. Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Currently, school districts can access the Extended Time Revenue Program to fund programming for students who are enrolled in school and participating in academic programming that is before or after school and is extended in an extended week or summer school program or any other additional programming authorized by this year's learning year program. Sorry, there's a lot of programs in there. However, this does not apply to the school districts who provide the educational services and residential facilities. This means that schools cannot access this important revenue for services provided in our residential treatment programs. You will hear from our testifiers that students in these programs could particularly benefit from the educational opportunities and the broad curriculum currently available to their peers. Many of these students also need the extra time and attention to address learning loss. This gap in service first came to my attention when I became the education policy chair and toured the Hennepin County Homeschool. Intermediate District 287 facilitates the educational programming for students placed in this facility, and they weren't able to access the revenue stream to extend learning beyond the regular school day or school year, exacerbating the opportunity gap their students were facing. A student seeking treatment or who has been placed in one of our residential facilities should not face falling even further behind academically. House File 725 would allow all school districts, including our intermediate districts and cooperatives, to qualify for extended time revenue for every pupil placed in a residential facility or other facilities providing mental health services, juvenile justice services, or related programming. Members, there are multiple letters of support in your packet from NAMI and a variety of providers, and I also have two testifiers here today that can paint an even better picture of why this bill is needed. But before that, I think that Ms. Adrienne, has a fiscal note that's hot off the presses to walk us through.
Ms. Adrienne.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Youakim. We did just receive the fiscal note, and so I will quickly just give an account of what the costs are. The amendment that was referenced, staff has been working with the agency on the amendment, so we are under the impression that the amendment should not have an impact on the fiscal note, that this is the current estimate of the cost of the bill. And what the fiscal note assumes is that all of the students who are currently enrolled in care and treatment programs by the end of the school year will participate in the summer program. And so the number of students, the current total of that is about 1,700 students. And so the cost then for fiscal year 22 would be about $930,000. And then starting in fiscal year 23 and ongoing, it would be just over $1 million.
Members, any questions on that? Not seeing any. I am going to move on to our testifiers. It looks like our first testifier with us today is Sandy Lewandowski, Superintendent of Intermediate School District 287. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Sandra Lewandowski, and I'm the superintendent of Intermediate District 287. My school district provides educational services to 11 West Metro school districts, and we are often responsible for some of the highest need learners in the state, including students in Setting 4 special education, students attending area learning centers, and those students who receive an education while attending a care and treatment facility. My specific district provides education to care and treatment programs run by Alina, Headway, Hennepin County, Nexus, Prairie Care, Volunteers of America, and Paragon. And today I'm representing all four of the intermediate school districts in the state. And I want to thank this committee for its focus on race equity, trauma, and student mental health. For many students in our programs, they are often impacted by all three of your priorities. Current statutory language for extended time revenue allows for districts to receive extra funding for learners who may benefit from additional instructional time, up to an additional 20% of the formula allowance. For a district such as ours that serves very high need students in different kinds of settings, as those I have mentioned in area learning centers and care and treatment facilities, the current inequity is amplified for some of the highest need students in the state. The current statute showcases an unintentional patchwork of funding for some students, but not for others. As this committee amplifies the priorities of racial equity and mental health, it is important to point out an example. Specifically, the current statute allows for a school district that provides an educational instruction to two care and treatment programs in Greater Minnesota, Prairie Lakes Education Center and Lake Park School in Willmar. They have the ability to receive extra revenue for extended time. However, students in other care and treatment programs in Minnesota, such as those served by my district and other intermediates, are not able to access this additional funding for extended instructional time. And for students in our correctional facilities and residential mental health programs, they often come to us in crisis, deficient in credits, and or are involved in the juvenile justice programs. These students are disproportionately students of color in the juvenile justice programs. The inequity of the current situation could be, the following example. We could have a student attending an area learning center program in Plymouth, Minnesota, in our district. And if that student gets discharged to go to a residential mental health facility, they would have extended revenue while in area learning center, but not when they go to a private residential treatment facility. This simply seems untenable for the student who indeed is probably in crisis, as is their family. I would like to say, however, that there are many considerations in this bill, but the biggest consideration is that of equity for students across the state. I know that those of us who are responsible for those educational services would be grateful, and the students would benefit tremendously. Members of the committee, we are trying to address these equities in everything you do and everything we do. Approval of House File 725 eliminates one such inequity, and I urge you to support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lewandowski. I see we have a question from Representative Kreshaw.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to the testifier, thank you very much for your work, and thank you for supporting this bill. I'm curious, you had mentioned many of the services that you provide and what you've been familiar with. How much has the opioid epidemic the opioid crisis contributed? Have you seen an increase in students? Have you seen that change at all? I'm curious about how much that chronic addiction is prevalent in your students and the students you've seen.
Ms. Lewandowski.
Madam Chair, Representative Kreshaw, we indeed see evidence of that. I don't have specific numbers, but for many of the kids in our programs, any of the programs, they are often involved with substance abuse.
Representative Krisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so to the testifier, I'll just ask it bluntly, if we were to see another drug introduced in the system, recreational cannabis, would you anticipate the funding here enough, or would you be coming back asking for more because you could anticipate more students?
Ms. Lewandowski.
Madam Chair, Representative Krisha, what I know is that the trauma and mental health issues that our students often have results in them using chemicals of all types, and certainly using cannabis is one of those. I don't necessarily have a firm opinion or way to address whether further legislation around the legalization of cannabis would increase that particular phenomenon.
We do have another testifier that we're Representative Krisha.
Yeah, thank you. Just a follow-up comment to the testifier. And it would be unfair of me to ask you one way or the other if you support or not. That's not my intent. I'm just trying to get to whether or not other issues are going to affect the educational budgets that are presented in front of us and the programs that you're working with. Again, it's not fair of me, and I'm not trying to paint you. I'm just trying to understand what you see in front of you. And I think your answer was a very fair one, that the chronic addiction comes from mental and other trauma that's inflicted in the homes. I would hope that while we're a finance committee, we can't reduce those necessarily in the budget, but we can find programs that do reduce those. I think the ultimate goal would be to make your job easier. Would that be a fair statement to the testifier?
Ms. Lewandowski.
Madam Chair, Representative Krisha, thank you. And certainly if there are services that are well matched to adolescents particularly, we would very much welcome that. I think the other distinction, however, that I would draw, if kids have access to adequate services to address their trauma, to address their mental health issues, and to address reasons why they might have gotten involved in the correctional facility, I would expect that over time, we would see that we wouldn't need as much money for those kind of services. Addressing the needs of our kids is a first priority, not just because it's what's right for kids, but because we spend money all the time for things that are interfering with their lives. And we need to spend more time, more money upfront so that we avoid those more serious deep end issues later on in our life.
Representative Krisha. Thank you, Ms. Lewandowski. Representative Thompson.
I'm sorry, I was muted.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
My apologies.
We do have another testifier I'd like to make sure we get to. So if you could make this brief, that would be wonderful.
Sure. Thank you. So to the testifier, thank you very much. And what I was saying on mute was there's a lot that we agree on, and your work is very important. And the one thing that sticks out on me, and I think to keep in perspective, is the more we focus on the kids, the more we can reduce the needs for these. And absolutely respect that. And just wanted to thank you for your work. This is a hard job.
Thank you very much.
Representative Thompson, do you still have your question?
I think we should, for the sake of time, go. I can ask after the last testifier. I just had a quick comment, but I want to go ahead and finish with it.
Okay, we will move on to the next testifier, and please feel free to ask your questions then. Up next, we have Connie Ross, the Residential Programs Administrative Director from North Homes Children and Family Services. Welcome to our committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for having me. My name is Connie Ross, and I'm the Director of our Residential Programs for North Home Children and Family Services. We provide residential treatment for children in Grand Rapids and Bemidji. I also serve on the board of Aspire Minnesota. My testimony today is made on behalf of all Minnesota's care and treatment in support of House File 725. The youth we care for are young boys and girls ages 10 to 18. As I'm sure you're aware, there's a growing children's mental health crisis in Minnesota. The need for care and treatment programs is critical. An estimated 109,000 children and youth in Minnesota need treatment for serious emotional disorders. The children we serve have serious, complex mental health needs. They're unable to function safely in our communities and in our public school settings. These children present with suicide ideation, aggression, have been exposed to significant trauma, neglect, sexual and physical abuse, and failure to thrive in their homes and community settings. As a result of what I just described to you, these children have also experienced significant disruption in their education. Children served in care and treatment are often at least a half to an entire year behind in credits required to pass their existing grade or pursue graduation. We have had children in our care that are as much as 2 years behind in the required credits to graduate. This equates to just one more disappointment and failure in their young lives. Positively, while in a structured environment such as residential treatment, we can actively support them in meeting their educational goals. Our hope for each student is that they can transition back to their community setting and school and be at a grade level so that they can integrate back into school activities with their peers. An example to demonstrate my point of need is young Jack. Young Jack had multiple suicide attempts, which resulted in 6 hospitalizations within the past year, placements in foster care, and finally placement in residential treatment. As you can imagine, each hospitalization and placement interrupted Jack's educational experience. Jack grew gravely behind in school. This resulted in Jack simply giving up and not attending school. Prior to admitting into residential treatment, Jack had not been to school for the preceding entire year. Upon completion of residential programming, Jack had enough seat hours to be able to transfer back to his home school and allow him to be at his expected grade level. More importantly, Jack was so very proud of his accomplishments. He was able to demonstrate that he was clearly talented and could succeed in his education. Alternatively, during the summer, when children admit to residential programs and we don't have an extended school time available to students, we see them fall behind. This is truly regrettable, as we know that each could be using this time to not simply keep up on their education, but to make substantial educational gains. As care and treatment providers of intensive services for students, we are emphatically supportive of all opportunities to enrich their experiences. School is critical, and collaboration with our local school districts is fundamental to delivering quality education to our students at this very critical time in their lives. We urge you to support HF 725 to assure all students can make the gains they need while in residential treatment. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak before you today.
Thank you, Ms. Ross. I see Representative Erickson has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This question is for Ms. Ross.
Proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Ms. Ross, I have a residential treatment center, and if we were to be successful in getting extended time revenue used to address the needs of these adjudicated young men in my facility, what assurances do we have that the staff who will come from a school in the area will be trained in how to deal with these students? Is there training that goes on to address the needs? Because some of these are, as I've heard you describe, high needs. And the staff who come into these facilities actually come in to a very tentative situation that they're not always acquainted with. So is there staff development available for these high school, usually it's high school and middle school staff who may provide the services?
Ms. Ross.
Madam Chair and Representative Erickson, thank you for the question. Within our residential programs, we do offer training to all school staff. They're able to participate in the required training that our mental health practitioners and professionals participate in as well. We really focus on giving them the tools to be able to effectively work with, de-escalate, understand trauma, so that they can effectively meet their needs. And quite often, these children's unique needs are embedded in their IEP. And so they have access to their, obviously, IEPs, their diagnostic assessments. And then, of course, the care and treatment staff provide support to our teachers and school staff within our buildings as well.
Thank you, Ms. Ross, and thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson, any follow-up? Okay, Representative Kreisha. Representative Kreisha, you're muted again.
Boy, thank you very much. To the testifier, Ms. Ross, thank you for your work. And this question is, as you look at the staff, and I've worked in one of these facilities. In fact, I worked in the facility that is in Representative Erickson's district. And it's absolutely traumatizing what these kids go through and the roads to get them at least to function. But one of the questions that I have is in these facilities, and I'm thinking back, and it hasn't been that long ago, to the diversity and the makeup, how important and what efforts are you putting forward for staff of color and diversity when you start to hire for these? And how important is that? And are there things that we shouldn't do to restrict your efforts to get good quality staff in? Because I know how very, very important those staff and those staff connections are to these students.
Ms. Ross.
Madam Chair, Representative Kreisha, thank you for the question. We agree that having staff of cultural diversity is imperative. We rally to promote hiring staff of diversity and do so whenever we can. We have a very strong cultural component within our programs. And so we understand that children need to work with staff like themselves. And so in regards to what can you do, I'm not sure. You know, in Grand Rapids, we tend to be rural. And so our hiring pool is quite limited here. We do things such as have incentives for employment within our agency. However, it still continues to be a challenge.
Representative Kreisha?
Yeah, and thank you for that, Ms. Ross. And so while there's broad agreement on the diversity side, I just want to make sure, because you highlighted it, in certain rural areas where it's just difficult to get staff, we have to make sure we're not just putting restrictions for you to get good staff. And I think it's a delicate balance, and thank you for answering that.
Representative Kreisha, it looks like Ms. Lewandowski would like to respond to the comment also. Ms. Lewandowski.
Madam Chair, Representative Kreisha, I would just like to add that one thing you and other legislators could do is fully support mental health programming in the schools, co-located mental health programs. We know by research that when mental health is embedded in a co-located school kind of environment, the mental health has the potential to be 6 times more effective. And the earlier we can get to those mental health and trauma issues, the better. So secondly, in regard to trauma, is providing the professional development and ongoing support to staff who are working with kids who have been involved with extreme trauma and sometimes can become very physically aggressive. We need to have safe environments for our staff. We have to have well-prepared teachers and educational assistants. It is then that we can do the best job with the students while they're with us and not need deeper end programming.
Thank you, Representative Kreisha.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you to the testifier. Thank you for your response. And what I would say to that is absolutely agree. I think we should focus on those. You always want to focus on the needs first. I think the challenge and what I'm wrestling with here is in our committees, we know what we need to go to first, academic achievement, mental health, trauma. But unfortunately, we put all these other proposals out there and we end up nibbling away at the problem. Believe me, if I could, working in child protection, working with trauma and chronic addiction and homeless kids, if I could solve that for you first, I would, and fight off all of these other things. But unfortunately, we have the must-haves, and then we have all the nice-to-haves, and the nice-to-haves start to suck away from the must-haves. So thank you very much, and absolutely support your work.
Representative Thompson, if you would like to ask your question now, I don't see any other testifiers on our list.
I don't think I'm going to have it. I just make a comment real quick. We spend a lot of money on incarceration instead of education when it comes to our kids. You think about it, the pipeline to the penitentiary is real. I know this first bill that Representative Mary Murphy proposed, there's like a lot of questions, but to be honest with you, these are all our kids. There's no such thing as somebody else's kids. These are all our kids, and we're debating the kids. We're debating children and money for the children. So when we think about like things that make sense, I hope that we like really like hammer down on what it is that's really important. Because this is our future, and I'll say this over and over again to this committee, this is our future, and we better invest wisely in our future. These kids are our future. You know, they have these labels, these at-risk youth. They're at risk if we don't help them. They're at risk if we don't help them. We have the power to help our kids. So let's start investing that. Every dollar we have to invest in these kids. We find money to do, you're absolutely right, Representative Sandra Lewowski, Ms. Lewowski said that we find money to do everything else. I mean, we have to debate on things that make sense. And these kids make sense. Our children, education, financing their education and financing things outside of these schools, other than flooding these doggone schools with these kids who are going to come back to school. And this is not a tangent. This is the truth. The truth really don't need help. These kids need our help. So I hope we're thinking about our investments wisely, because the payoff will be greater later. Or do we want to pay off? You know, and I just want to put that on this, in this space, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. I see that Ms. Lewandowski would like to respond to that comment. Ms. Lewandowski.
Madam Chair, Representative Thompson, all of our kids are all of our kids. We don't treat them, we don't fund them, we don't provide for them equitably. That's my reality in the district I work. And I would add that while funding is always short for the things we need in our society, I know that I spend over $1 million on workman's comp bills that I would rather spend on mental health services and instructional needs. So we can exchange some of the things we're funding. It's just whether our intent, our desire, and our goal of racial equity is one that we want to work on.
Thank you, Ms. Lewandowski. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is for Ms. Lewandowski. I was really intrigued by what you said about making sure that we have mental health supports co-located within schools. Can you talk a little bit about which services in particular you think would be the best to co-locate within schools to adequately address student mental health?
Ms. Lewandowski.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I would appreciate that opportunity. What I see needed is that schools have morphed into quasi-mental health providers. And that has really been amplified and articulated during this pandemic. We have kids, many, many kids, who have a range of mental health issues. The schools are not prepared or funded to do that. I believe the time has come to pivot and intersect those two things that our legislature funds, mental health and educational services. It truly does not make sense that we need to send educational services into mental health facilities, but we don't necessarily provide the mental health services when they go back to education. The services schools are providing right now have not kept up with, the funding has not kept up with that. Our kids are losing. We still spend as much or more money when their needs get higher and higher and higher than it would take to put the services there to begin with. We could do this. The time is right to do this, and I'd be more than willing to help work on any such efforts. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Lewandowski. I think it's really important. I think you're talking a lot about how our needs are increasing, but the funding hasn't kept up, if I'm really synthesizing what you're saying, and that's something that this committee as an Education Finance Committee really needs to look at. Are there any other, is there anything else in terms of funding and policy that you think that this committee should really be examining to make your job and to make your job better and easier?
I'm assuming this is for Ms. Lewandowski.
Thank you.
Ms. Lewandowski.
Madam Chair, Representative Jordan, Indeed, there are things. I would go back to teacher and educational assistant training. We can't expect people coming out of a college prep program or from a different job if they're an educational assistant and walk into a facility where kids have significant mental health issues and have those staff be prepared to deal with that. So teacher staff preparation, trauma training is the first thing I would say. And also attention to the safety needs of our staff. I have trouble getting staff when they're constantly injured. And I think that's plausible to understand from anyone in this committee. So we need to stabilize and have safe programs and well-prepared staff to address the student needs that are coming through the door. Our passion is there, but our training and our funding doesn't always keep up with it.
Follow-up, Representative Jordan?
No, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Lewandowski, for both your work and your words in this committee today. It's greatly appreciated.
Thank you.
Representative Thompson.
Also happen to be a member of this organization where we educate and inspire people to end racial injustice, Fight for Justice, LLC. I go into these facilities. I speak to children who are locked up in these facilities in particular. One facility, the guards there want me to key in on one particular child, and I'll be real quick, because he's so tough, his chest pumps out when he leaves out of the facility. And he's punking kids out of their lunch, and he's a problem child. He's probably so, you know, and when I walk in and I speak to the child and I ask, you, why are you here? I'm here for stealing. And I said, no, you're not going home. They don't have a place where they keep you for stealing. You're here. And I find out this kid is here for molesting his sister. This is the truth. It's a true story. Molesting his sister. And I'm looking at the guards now, and I'm looking at the people who want me to key in on this kid, because he's not, he better not come out of that. He's in this, he's crying. Sometimes they see him on camera crying, and that's why he's crying. No, he's crying because he can't go home. He can't go home when he's old enough to go home, and he'd be labeled right. So when I'm looking at the administrators and the people here, and I'm saying to them, put this kid, give him a basketball. He's like 6 feet tall. Talk to him. You're his father. You're the only thing that is a role model. And what you give him is just turn the key and lock the door. Turn the key and lock the door. So there's a need for culturally intelligent people in these buildings, because this kid is not a bully. He's acting out because he's in a facility he's not familiar with, but he's also not going to be a punk in this facility. So he has to put on this act as if he's a tough guy, but when in that reality, he's crying on the inside waiting. And so when I left, he said, Mr. Thompson, now you're going to come back. And I talked to the director. And I didn't get a dime for this, by the way. I didn't ask for a dime. But yes, I'll be back because I need to come in and check on you. But I started writing the University of Minnesota about this kid, because he's 6 feet tall in a facility where they treat him like he's a criminal. And he's there because somebody taught him this behavior in this house, by the way. This is something that was learned. I'm saying that when we come and ask for money, let's ask for money for things that make sense and use the money for stuff that makes sense. I have a 30-some year degree in being black. I don't have a bachelor's degree in being black. I don't come with instructions. This kid needs people who not only can understand him, but meet him on his level, and not just these people, these are human beings that we're talking about. These people just come in and turn the key and they lock the door and they unlock the door. They don't even understand this child. And I want you to understand that this is, like, I'm paying attention. It also seems like sometimes I'm preaching to the choir. These are real problems, because we send these kids back to the community at some point. So while you have them, at least have people who can, like, get on their level and get to them and reach to them, because that's all we have. And so I guess what I'm saying is, when you're asking for funding, at least use the money for things that you see that make sense. You go and say, I need somebody with at least a bachelor's degree. How do you have a bachelor's in being black? How do you have a bachelor's in being culturally intelligent? Children don't come with instruction manuals. So I just want y'all to understand, like, I'm so serious about
helping the community that needs help the most, because we spend a lot of money on incarceration and not enough on education.
Thank you, Representative Thompson. I'm not sure if there was a question in there for one of our testifiers, and if there wasn't, feel a need to respond or would like to respond?
Madam Chair, I would, please.
Okay. Ms. Lewandowski?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Thompson, I could not agree with you more. I work in a school district as superintendent for the last 15 years. I see the pipeline to prison in real time with our 6, 7, and 8-year-olds who are not getting their trauma and mental health needs met. Those needs don't go away if we don't address them and if we don't fund them, and they continue as the youngster gets older, and they often and regrettably do end up just the way you described. I believe that's caused a great deal by our country's racism and lack of addressing trauma, along with other issues, but those are two big ones that I see all the time. It's not right. We are not racially equitable. Our kids need better, and that's what we should be doing as we go forward. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lewandowski. Representative Joachim, any closing remarks?
Oh, so many, but I will keep it brief. This is what happens when you have amazing people testifying, and Superintendent Lewandowski and Director Ross, who push us to have those conversations that we should be having in this committee. And I want to thank Representative Jordan and Representative Thompson as well for that, and Representative Kreisha and Representative Erickson. These are the kind of conversations I was hoping to have the last 2 years in education policy. And I want to thank Superintendent Lewandowski for all the work that they're doing in District 287 around trauma. Their school are the ones that keyed me into the book that we read in education policy last 2 years ago around the boy who was raised as a dog, and Dr. Bruce Perry's work and the work they're doing in training their staff on how to deal with trauma in students. And because that's what it's about. All that we're talking about right now is prevention, layers and layers of prevention that we need to be investing in, because as Representative Thompson said, they're all our kids, and kids don't come with instruction manuals. That's what we always used to say in early childhood and family education as well. And that those layers are things like full service community schools that Representative Murphy brought forward. It's my bill on para training to make sure that the folks in our schools have the education that they need to deal with kids that need that extra help. It's about this bill. It's about the extended time revenue so that we can take the opportunities for our students that are the most in need in our residential treatment facilities and our correctional facilities to do that extended time with them in the evenings and summer so that they don't get punished and miss out on their education because they're trying to get help. We need to talk about layers, but we also need to talk about that there isn't a magic bullet. There's not just one thing that we can do. What we do know is that kids don't come in pieces. And as all the testifiers have said today, too, kids walk into our doors in our education system with empty stomachs, with trauma, with not accessing health care, with no access to affordable housing, and all that prevention. Just an ounce of prevention is a pound of gain. If we cut to the root of the problem and start addressing students as they are, as whole human beings, a lot of the money we're spending on the tail end in our justice system and in all other systems will be decreased over time. And we have to stop talking from a framework of scarcity when we're talking about investing in our future. And I hope we can really put some money where our mouths are, because it's all fun to talk about, oh, this sounds great, or that sounds great, or, oh, that's just a want and not a need. No, all of this is need. Our kids are need. But I will bring us back to what we're really supposed to be talking about right now, but it all loops in together, is this bill. This bill about extended time revenue and access to it is about helping more kids. It's about preventative measures, and it's about giving hope for a future. Students that are in our residential facility and juvenile justice programs face many obstacles. This bill can help take one of those obstacles away. Having access to educational opportunities can help them receive an education that will help them on the road to recovery and well, well into the future. So members, I ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Joachim. And with that, Representative Joachim renews her motion to lay over House File 725 as amended for possible inclusion for further consideration at a later date. Members and testifiers, thank you so much for the work you've done today. I appreciate the thoughtfulness and the depth of these conversations. And with that, this hearing is adjourned.